And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Charlie Newham! Finally, got him on. Karen, thanks for staying later and keep us entertained. But let me tell you what's going on. Sterling Lujan, S-T-E-R-L-I-N, Lujan, L-U-J-A-N, sterlinglujan.com. Now, he's like, I guess, the PR guy over at bitcoin.com, Bitcoin Cat. Now, Sterling knows from me being, we went to Narcopoca, man, I'm screaming about, and you go, IPFS, everybody take a shot of your whiskey, okay? Because here he goes saying about it. Well, then I saw Sterling goes on, he says, hey, let me tell you what's up. This last week, he goes, look, what's up? We took all of Julian Assange, WikiLeaks stuff, and Bitcoin.com and one of our developers kind of took and put it all up there forever and always. Ha! In your face. All right. You know, expand on that, Sterling. Tell me what's up.
Sure. The first thing I want to mention to you might come as a surprise, but I'm actually no longer with Bitcoin.com as of current.
Why?
I am...
Did you pee in the pool or something? What happened?
No. Nothing like that. Just difficult times, and I'm a pricey fellow. So
there you go. All right. Well, so tell me about this story.
Sure. I definitely can help. I hope clarify this story and sort of what's going on with Bitcoin Cash and IPFS and WikiLeaks. So basically, what happened is a Bitcoin Cash developer. I just recently spoke with him live. His name's Chris Troutner. Day before yesterday, I believe, on my own live feed.
Give me his stuff and get his ass on the show. Let's do it.
Right. Yeah. I can get into contact with him and bring him on. So basically what he did was he connected the WikiLeaks files, the WikiLeaks cache, to the Bitcoin Cash network. And so there's a lot of people who are unclear on what exactly this means. They think that he just linked the WikiLeaks files to the Bitcoin Cash chain. Here's the thing, though. People are thinking about this completely the wrong way. So when you're talking about IPFS or using, and we'll get into that. For anybody who doesn't know, IPFS, IPFS stands for Interplanetary File System. And you and I have talked a little bit about this. But the IPFS doesn't, it's not like the regular HTTP protocol where you have to connect to a server and do a send and respond mechanism. Instead, what happens is there's content metadata, and what that means is that it uses a proximity algorithm. That means the person who's closest to you, in a peer-to-peer fashion, you download that content from them, right? So all it means is when Chris connected the files to IPFS and then it was put on the Bitcoin Cash network, all that means is the hash to IPFS is on the Bitcoin Cash networks. Meaning when somebody says, I want to go to memo.cash and look at the WikiLeaks files, they have that hash that goes in, that routes in to IPFS.
Yeah, I'll help explain what he's talking about. What Bitcoin Cash has done is given the address or the name of the file. The files are everywhere. Yeah. You know, the file will come and go to your, I guess, geographically or closest ping, you know, whatever. So I got, you know, my neighbor over here has an IPFS node and it'll go there and then I can look at it from there. Or I have it myself and it just downloads onto mine and it caches there. Now, you can have them pinned. Now, somewhere, these files are pinned somewhere in interplanetary file sharing or system. And what it is, it's sitting there on, make sure it's always there and it seeds out, or yeah, they call it, whatever, pinning, and it goes out to anybody requesting it, and then it scales. The more people that request it, the more nodes have it, the more copies, and it goes. Now, if nobody looking at it anymore, it kind of starts to fade off of those down to the pinned files or the pinned computers, which is what we created. We created a network of pinned computers so that James Corbett and Luke Radowski and Freedom's Phoenix and Tragedy and Hope and Pirates Without Board and Declare Your Independence, they're always there. Yeah. But when somebody requests them, there it goes. Now, what Bitcoin Cash did and on their blockchain is they made sure that always that link, that address, that file name is there for you to always go to, and you can download the file. How far off am I?
Yeah, that's exact. No, you exactly nailed it. That's right. It's just complete.
Yeah, people think that you downloaded the files onto some Bitcoin cache. No, that's not what you did. You downloaded that. See, that's one thing we're working with. We had a couple days ago a gentleman, they're doing this IPFS in June. They're starting up, we're making a grandma adjust button for people being able to use IPFS, and they're talking about search. So that's one thing. Derek's getting on their standards board of, you know, we're going to get it taken care of, because it's all about, you got all these hashes. Searching for a transaction of a Bitcoin transaction, you go, yeah, I see the transaction, but what's in it? I don't know. You know, how do I search, you know, for the content or where it came from, or some metadata, the title of the file? You know, I don't know. So that's what's next. It's what really kicked, as an activist, I remember in the mid-90s to where Yahoo was just cool stuff, and you could fill out a form and put my cool stuff up on your list of cool stuff. Well, that's where it's going to start. Is there going to be web crawlers? Is there going to be whatever it is? But when search hits IPFS, which is what we're working on now, boom shakalaka, it's all over.
Yeah, that's right, because it doesn't have a clear central point of failure. Now, there's ways that some servers can block some of the activity that's happening on the IPFS network, but if somebody wants to get to the content, they're going to be able to get to it through some point. You can't just take it down. It is a true peer-to-peer network. It's a lot like BitTorrent too. Whereas when you try to download, say, a music that's a BitTorrent file is not actually the content itself. It's just a representation of the content. And so once you connect to that, then you'll be able to connect to someone who has it close by and then download it basically directly from that individual in a true peer-to-peer fashion.
I got a peer-to-peer download of somebody got the Christchurch, New Zealand shooting. They finally MP4. It's sitting over on that, and I can put, and I haven't even looked at it because I don't care. But I do care that they were trying to censor it and it not be available. And for whatever reason, I got nothing better. I got plenty of things better to do. I got nothing better to do, or just out of principle, prepare for show or something, I'll go over there and watch it. But the fact that they would deny me that, I'm like, oh, I was a bad eye indeed.
you know, and one of the awesome things about this, and Chris talked about this when he came on and chatted with me for a bit, but this idea of the more people who try to hide it and censor this content and get away from it, the more, the more that it's going to spread, the more people are going to want to look at it. And part of that has to do with this desire to get acquainted with taboo information or ideas that are taboo. If something is restricted psychologically, people have a tendency to want to say, what is that? What's going on? Let me get into that. And I think that's one of the other reasons why the drug war has expanded so much, because
you want some? Nah, it's legal now. Never mind.
You're gonna try that anymore?
It's like, I was gonna try marijuana, but they made it legal, so I don't care. The government wants me to approve smoke, so it's obviously bad. So why did you post this? Kind of tweet or signal, something that you did, you put it out and it just went stupid. Sure, I got it from multiple angles. There you go. Hey, what you been doing? Look what Sterling did. Boom, 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 boom. And I saw it going, here we go. Here we freaking go. What's your view of this forever internet? What's necessary for it to really go to the next level? I mean, there's search, but what are some of the other things that you're seeing needs to be developed?
So I think one of the definitely something that needs to happen, we need better search engines. This is one of the reasons why I like pre-search so much. If we can build a decentralized search engines that don't rely strictly on, you know, Google here, Google there, Google everywhere, then we're going to have more of an opportunity, I think, to allow people to look and conduct searches without having to, you know, all these algorithms some of these centralized companies are using, they have a tendency to block out things they want to block out. They can shadow ban people. They can prevent certain information from being looked up. So we need more decentralized search engines as well as some of these other networks. I think,
you know, Colin Pape from Presearch, we've had him on and we've roomed together before different festivals and hung out and good friends. And when we were in Acapulco, Brian, he goes, yeah, I'm on it. So he had one of his developers in Poland working with Derek on some stuff. Now that Derek's kind of got on the inside crowd, we need to ping them again and get them involved, because I'm telling you, you know, whoever cracks this IPFS search thing, it's ka-ching, but they're looking for automation too much. I remember Yahoo was not that. What made Yahoo was, hey, I got some cool stuff. You got to send in your sitemap? Fine, send in your freaking I'm here map. You know, it's what's going to happen anyway, and it doesn't even have to be automated. It's coming.
Yeah, it is. It's we're
basically
almost there.
Well, what do you mean almost there? I mean, we're almost there. Almost. I mean, to me, we're using it. We did.
Right,
you
know, right.
Are you at? Are you on a computer? You can go to Freedom's Phoenix. I want to show you something.
Yeah.
Go to Freedom's Phoenix. Show you. Next. Done. Okay. If you go to Freedom's Phoenix, underneath the TV live broadcast thing there that Derek put back, underneath you'll see it says IPFS. Okay. So if you.
Yep, I see it.
So, you know, right click, open that, then go down to Belay, you know, the pirate page, you know, pirateswithoutborders.com, and you'll see about in the same area on the left there, IPFS there, too. Right click on that. Now, sometimes it loads fast, sometimes it doesn't. We change, there's this gateway thing we got to deal with, and, you know, all this other stuff that we're doing. But it's, we're using it. And what we did, if you go to, if you put James Corbett, IPFS, Ernest Hancock, or something like that in a search, you'll see all of Corbett's stuff is platformed. It's done. All the videos, all the MP3s, all the stuff, the age restricted, you know, all the stuff. And I'm going, Rear. So now that we demonstrated it, what we're working on over here, I got a workstation that I created over here for taking Raspberry Pis and putting IPFS on them so people can just buy for, I don't know, $150 or something. And you got, and now we were worried about, we needed to have the memory on the board. And they get up to terabyte little SD chips now, but they're $1 billion. They'll be giving them away later. But, you know, you have these chips that you can put in and you get all of Corbett, a terabyte, you get quite a bit of stuff. Now, I'm going, God, I really would like to get that $150 external hard drive that has 4 terabytes for $150. I'd really like to do that. Well, you can't get as much speed, and it doesn't really work, and the platform into the end of the end. They changed that, and the audience is people going, no, they have this new firmware in the Raspberry Pi that you can do what you want with a 4 terabyte hard drive connected to the Pi and do IPFS. And I'm going, Na-na-na-na-na-na-na. So here we go. So I'm over there playing with this now, doing Bob Anderson and I are sitting there, kind of bam, go. And what's going to happen? Pirate communications. Do you got your pirate communications? Are you pirate enough? Do you have your Raspberry? Then we have that just old laptops. You said, yeah, you just got an old sitting in the closet laptop. Well, Stephen and Derek J. from Portsmouth, they're like, boom, we're on it. They're already downloading the stack and doing kind of whatever, and we have it's called. All right, do this. It's called sitepins.net, SITEPINS.net. Sitepins.net is the instructions for doing this that Derek put up, and they're expanding that. So we're way down the road on this, Sterling. I mean, damn, it be a happening.
Right. Yeah, for us, we're really good to go. You know, what I'm really excited about, too, Ernest, is there's going to be a ton of different blockchains and cryptocurrency systems that are going to integrate, that already are integrating with IPFS. I mean, a good example of that is DTube in the Steam blockchain.
Well, we do DLive because it just seems to work a lot better, the development team and these guys and having doing of whatever. But, yeah, I feel you. You know, this stuff is you know, DTube is IPFS. I mean, we load up. That's where our stuff is on the site is there, but we stream live on DLive and, you know, and Facebook and YouTube. We came back online. I told you what was going to happen. When they did the purging, I'm not dark. I'm here to say I'm over there. Well, that's what IPFS is. Now we're back, and we're not purged.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's twitch.lrn.fm.
Sure.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
No stinking roads! Who built the roads? Well, I don't know. People! If we even need them because we have flying cars! Yeah, can you imagine all the movies? You know, it's just going to be remakes of everything and my pink Cadillac flying car. And, you know, I'm looking forward to all the innovation, all the remakes, it's just going to be awesome. All right. So Sterling, you're seeing this. You understood. You kind of heard the buzz on, you know, IPFS and what's this going to do and change the planet and everything. Where you see the big impact? The world is going to change in what way, where?
Yeah, let's get to that. I wanted to back up to one of your original questions. You were curious about what even brought me to make the post that I did and get this information spread out. So I don't know if you saw it or not. Where I got the information from, I keep up with Bitcoin.com's news station pretty closely, their news. And Jamie actually wrote the article that explained Chris connecting IPFS and Bitcoin Cash. And when I read that article, I thought, yeah, this is massive. So I had to immediately start talking about that and getting more people involved, because I think there's a lot of people, and this kind of moves into where you were talking about, there's a lot of people who haven't even started to grasp this technology yet. There's a lot of people in the mainstream of the internet who haven't started using it or leveraging it in a lot of ways. And I think still one of the problems that we have is we're still working on the blockchain infrastructures, right? We need more UI, more strong UX. The user experience and the user interfaces need to be refined. And
Grandma just button.
That's right. Exactly what you say. Grandma just button all the time. But that's what I mean by we're getting there. Like, folks like us are going to use this stuff, and we're going to use it all the time. And it's already creating a nice ecosystem of pirate communications taking place all the time. But when everybody starts using this stuff, and that's not even to say that everyone necessarily has to use it, but I think it's just it's just naturally, I think, the direction the internet's going, because it's also more user-friendly, and it's more efficient to have proximity-based communications and peer-to-peer networks, people working together, because it's faster, it's cleaner, it's quicker, it's more efficient, just the best way to go. So I think that's where we're on our way.
You know what? This just represents what we've been screaming for years. You know, at the same thing that we were promised with library, mines, and storage, and made safe, and on and on and on. And it was a few years ago that, and I didn't know this till recently. It was Paul Poy that told me that just a couple months ago that Filecoin and IPFS was the same guys. You know, Juan Bonet and these guys. And that explains everything. All of a sudden, now I get it. But what happened was the proof of storage is going to be really difficult. Proof of dissemination, I don't know if that's going to work. Well, what happened is MadeSafe tried to make it all one release, and then, you know, to get this all worked out, it's all integrated. It's kind of like you want Internet Explorer, but you got to get Windows to get it or something. But nobody wants it, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, so you have IPFS. And Filecoin, they did it separately. They go, here's the tech that we're going to do to disseminate this and how it's going to work, and it's done. And now we're going to try and monetize it over here. Well, I don't have to wait. I'm not waiting. I can do it, right? Okay, let's do it. Because Derek goes, yeah, I can do it. We can kind of do all that geeky stuff. And now everybody and their grandma's like, we know enough some Derek, because Derek's going to fix it for him. So he's already on, you know, working with the standards on this. He don't want to be in charge of anything because, you know, he's busy. But he definitely wants to make it to where it doesn't get side railed and we get something like what Yahoo developed as a search engine back when it used to be useful, is that we decide what is important. We, you know, put it up, or we do the keywords, and then the algorithms came in with Google and it did it kind of automatically. And people, you know, just by them clicking on something, it was what rose it to the top and how that happened. But then they started manipulating with algorithms, and that's how they do this control of they were gaming it for Hillary, and it still didn't work. So did IPFS, we're at the very, very beginning of the development with the high tech that we were looking for in the mid-90s for the bulletin board thing. When it went from bulletin boards to World Wide Web, it delayed it 20, 30 years. And we could see it happening. We had to go through that to where now we're dealing with this kind of peer-to-peer, but you can use, you know, Grandma Just Button on Firefox. That's what's going on. And there are so many little things. How do you see this in comparison to what's the 90s, or where we're at, or what's going to be the future with this kind of tech?
Yeah, well, I remember in the 90s, we were, you know, there was this whole, the internet was just about to surpass some roadblocks and then begin to blow up, of course. And there was a lot of, but the thing about the 90s that was interesting to me is all the individuals who saw this coming, they knew that we're going to get to a point where everybody's going to be using this. It's going to transform commerce. It's going to transform social interactions. So the cypherpunks, the crypto anarchists, these guys said, listen, as soon as we get this stuff spread into the hands of everybody, governments are going to do everything in their power to to censor information, to steal people's information, to surveil people and do all the nasty things that they can, as governments are known to do. So these guys said, we have to create secure pirate communications. We have to create a way for people to connect with each other without having to worry about governments or criminals or people stealing their information. So Timothy May, Eric Hughes, these guys were writing treatises, manifestos, saying, listen, we need to make sure we create the tools to prevent this from happening. So, and this is an awesome thing, Ernest. It was because of those individuals that really cryptographic technology spread to the public, right? Beforehand, it was all in the hands of the NSA, the CIA, the three-letter agencies. All of these guys had these technologies sort of under wraps. But then it came, then it went public, and then it spread, and now really the cryptocurrency ecosystem, all of these guys, entrepreneurs, developers, visionaries, iconoclasts, they've taken this technology and they've started integrating it into the global united web, or as Marshall McLuhan said, the global village. The global village is essentially a cyber security haven for people to protect themselves. I want to get into another step of this here in a minute.
Go. How long can you go? You know, we had we lost two segments. So how long did I get to keep you? Because you only got like a couple of minutes left in the live show.
Yeah, so 30, 40 minutes.
All right, yeah, we'll go until you're boring or bored, you know. All right, go. Finish it while we're still in the live show. What do you want to say?
The next place I want to start where we're going to get to talk about is soon we're going to be creating, and this is already in effect with on platforms like EOS especially, we're going to be creating decentralized companies, you know, the whole decentralized autonomous company, decentralized autonomous organizations. And these are going to be companies that can be completely transparent in the sense of their voting mechanisms, what they do, and how they're structured. The old models for structuring companies and organizations is going to go to the wayside, and we're going to do it in a completely digitized fashion, in a way where we don't need any kind of external apparatus or government to oversee the regulations and how these structures function. So we're going to have companies created on these type of platforms, right? On these decentralized peer-to-peer networks. And I think that's another step into moving toward a society that has more of a security and privacy and anonymity minded.
Okay, now let's talk about that, because we have, sure, Ethereum was the promise of the multi-sig contract of we're going to come down. It's just, yeah, anybody in the space, as more and more time goes by and I talk to them, they're just like, wow, that's just gotten so top-heavy kind of crap. And I'm wondering, is there viable competition for what they're doing? And you're talking about EOS, and I heard Bitcoin Cash blockchain is going to start going into development in that area a little bit. What's the competition with Ethereum?
Yeah, you're right, Ernest. The competition is extremely heavy for Ethereum. The problem with Ethereum has been the major scalability issues that network has faced. And not only the scalability issues, but also some security issues. Whenever these companies try to create technologies on top of the Ethereum blockchain, oftentimes they'll run into problems, or there'll be a major bug that will allow for security vulnerabilities to crop up. That's what happened with the DAO a couple of years back, which then created a situation where the developers on Ethereum, including Vitalik, decided to fork off, right, which created Ethereum Classic and then the main Ethereum chain. And they had to do that in order to try to prevent the money that these hackers were stealing from moving that money around to more places and effectively getting away with the heist. But because they forked it, they prevented that from happening. But those kind of issues haven't been completely solved. There's been several different iterations.
Yeah, what Sterling is talking about is they had a bug or a code problem, and the guys told them, they go, yeah, screw you, and we're not. And he goes, all right, well, it's ours now. We just took your money. What are you going to do about it? And they go, we're going to have to hard fork our own thing to kind of make that not well. People went, what the hell are you? So they kept the original Ethereum Classic, you know, over here, and then the new Ethereum they built everything on. But what it sent was the message that if it gets jacked up and we don't like it, we'll just, you know, take our football over here and go do another one. And I'm like, wow, that was a bad precedent from the beginning. So we'll see how that works out. But that's kind of gotten top heavy, and it's all that geeky stuff. Everybody, I got some more geekdom to put in there. Can we make it simpler? We're going to talk about simpler. Sterling Newham. We're going to keep going. Go to the live streams on freedomsphoenix.com and all the other places.
Nice.
Hey, I'm
all right, there we go. All right, so I'm pretty close on what happened with Ethereum. I mean, you know, it was something like that. They said, hey, man, we can take, okay, we took it. And they go, damn it, we're just going to have to hard fork it over here and say that doesn't count. But then Ethereum Classic kept going. You know, yeah. Is that a, is it being built on or developed for anything? Or is it just passing around Ethereum crypto?
Yeah, I don't really keep up with what's going on Ethereum Classic, so I have no idea. But I'm assuming that they're attempting to build stuff on it. I really don't know. I keep up with Ethereum a little bit. I guess what, to get back to this idea of this competition for these decentralized Turing-complete machines, EOS is one, Bitcoin Cash is one, and now these blockchains are allowing people to build technologies on top of them and also to create coins and products and really build out the infrastructure. But the thing is, both Bitcoin Cash and EOS, I think, here's the key thing, Ernest, they don't have the same scalability problems that Ethereum has, right? EOS, for one, it uses Dan Larimer's technology, similar to the, what he used for Steam. I think he calls it grapheme technology, and this basically allows for hyper scalability. Essentially, scalability is built into the platform so that it can grow extremely large, extremely quickly. Now, there are some technical...
Okay, what can grow? The blockchain itself and reading it, or...?
Right. It can grow in the sense that a lot of people can start developing on it and using it, and it can scale, the blocks can scale to meet the user demand, especially...
And how are they doing that? Is it a memory thing, or, you know, it's just making the blocks bigger... block sizes, or they got some other tech? What are they doing?
Yeah, so the way that I understand it, and some of these details really get into the weeds, but EOS uses the same technology as Steemit, and this grapheme technology really just allows it to scale extremely quickly. And here's the key, because I think it also uses delegated proof of stake, and that was the big thing that Steemit used to help it scale, right? Because the problem is block size. When you're just doing proof of work, there's always this fear that the blocks aren't going to be able to scale as largely as possible. And I think, and this is where we can get in talking about Bitcoin Cash too, because the Bitcoin Cash developers, people supporting it, automatically know that the blocks can simply just scale to accommodate as large as it needs to grow, right? That was the whole purpose.
But there's other, what you're talking, there's other tech. A proof of stake is,
yes.
No, this is one thing I think, was it EOS or what? They're going, we're going to go, and I think Ethereum was threatening this. They have, I guess they use script algorithm of the ASICs that do the graphic card, whatever the hell. And then we need to have a combination. You can only do proof of stake after you do a bunch of proof of work. So you got this cryptographic built up, difficult, you can't change. And then you go over to this kind of thing. I've heard that discussion. And then, you know, we have Colin Cantrell was just in last week last week. And that's what they're got their three levels, you know, for different things that they're doing with Nexus. And I'm going, all right, well, one of the main things is that you have some proof of work, proof of stake, proof of whatever, all this crap. Everybody's doing this new technology to get into this scalability thing and the security thing, and they're all overlapping, but people have taken and emphasized different parts of this for different cryptos. And some of the new, it's like a new Democratic candidate comes out, you know, Elizabeth Warren, I'm running for Democratic president, and she's not going to be it. Why? Because she was the first one out. I mean, whoever the first guy's out, they're always gone. You know, they're never come out first. That's why they wait, and then here comes the flood, and which one, you know, gets the nomination or whatever. It's rarely the first guys. So they keep saying they got first mover advantage and all that kind of stuff. But whenever you got competition to like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash and some of these other more legacy, I'm going, yeah, the first ones really usually aren't the guys. But as time goes on, it kind of flushes out. So EOS has a combination of proof of work and then stake. Is it combined? Is it added to it? What's the plan?
Yeah, so let me put this in the context of Steemit, because it uses a similar function and I understand it a bit better and I can explain it, I think, a bit better. So on the Steemit platform, which
to
is
grandpa's,
which is that's my hope. So Steemit has high scalability because it is, yes, what they call a hybrid model. It's both proof of work and delegated proof of stake. And here's how it works on Steemit. And I'm not as advanced when it comes to EOS, but I'm assuming it's pretty close to the same based on what I've read.
So Dan Larimer worked on both, right?
Both, yeah. Right. So it's a similar grapheme technology. Okay. So on Steemit, you have witnesses, and these witnesses are individuals who are conducting proof of work. The proof of work piece of this, which is the same thing that Bitcoin uses, meaning that they're trying to solve, these computers are trying to solve complex mathematical puzzles to maintain that blockchain, maintain the security of it, and also create new Bitcoin or new crypto. So the same thing is happening with witnesses on the Steemit blockchain. These guys are maintaining the network, creating new blocks, and generating new Steem tokens. However, that's just one piece of it. The other piece of it is the delegated proof of stake model. And under, we'll talk about proof of stake first. Under proof of stake, basically individuals who have high levels of that particular crypto in their wallet, that means they're doing the work. They're doing the work to maintain the blockchain. Simply having a stake in that platform is doing the work to maintain it and keep it secure. Under delegated proof of stake, which is a really interesting creation, which was created by Daniel Larimer, what happens is people upvote or they vote on propositions on that blockchain and they delegate the rewards of that blockchain to those people they upvote. They delegate their stake, and that also helps maintain the blockchain, but it doesn't create this. See, here's the fear of proof of stake, Ernest. If individuals have a whole bunch of that cryptocurrency to maintain the network, what that does is create a situation where it almost looks like a pyramid scheme, where the first people involved in that network are the ones who are more incentivized to stay on it because they're making the most money, right? And then the people who come after generally have less. But under delegated proof of stake, you send the blockchain rewards to other people. So that helps create...
But why do that as a support for a project or support for what? What's the incentive for someone to delegate?
Yeah, so on the Steemit blockchain, somebody delegates because it gives them power on the network. It gives them influence on the network. So when they upvote somebody's content, right? You upload a video to DTube. Somebody likes that who has stake in the system. They give you more money. What that does is that puts your content to the top, right? If if it shows that that person is going to have higher rewards, that is the content that a lot of people are going to have the opportunity to see. Like on Reddit, you upvote some content, and it's based purely on the number of votes. On the Steemit blockchain, when you upvote somebody, they have more. There's more rewards there, and it's showing they're going to get more rewards. There's more likely that somebody is going to pay attention to that particular post. So it gives that person power on that blockchain. It's in a way they have the influence and the ability to say who's going to succeed and who's going to fail. This is really the power behind having a stake in that particular system. That's the reason.
You know, I have a Steemit account. Our DTubes go over and so on. And I don't check it. I mean, I can't get in. It's only on Donna's computer. It has that big, giant password encrypted or whatever, and I got to change it if I want to get and know what that. I'm afraid, man, because if you lose your Steemit thing, you're done, you know? So we'll let it go by. But we have been participating with all of our videos and so on. I probably got some Steemit over there, a little bit of something. If I go over and check, yay. But it's going. Do you think a lot of this is going to consolidate? You know, Steemit had a lot of promise. Then we got, other platforms that are doing it. We talked to Bill Ottman from Mines. Nice. We talked to Jeremy Kaufman from Library. And each one of these, my question is, can I have my catapult channel? You know, I just need to know if I can keep my little furry kittens getting catapulted in the swirl cactuses online, then I know I'm free. IPFS allows for that.
Yes.
You know? And that's one thing that they're going, yeah, that's where I'm putting my effort. But the indexing, the search engine for it, if it lists that, that's what they went after Kim.com for with Mega Upload. They go, hey, man, the fact that you even listed the hash where it could be found on this forever, and you're guilty, 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 guilty. So there has to be an IPFS of search. You know, that's on everybody's everything, and where is it seeded from? It's a arms race between freedom and not so free. And I'm going, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. And, you know, and right now they got, you know, this thudding, fear, uncertainty, and doubt is what Julian Assange is representing. And this could happen to you too kind of thing. And I'm going, yeah, I got the Christchurch video sitting over there. Haven't watched it. Don't really care. I get it. You watch video games. I mean, you know, but the fact that I couldn't get it, or they were banning it, or anybody talked about it, and you're not allowed. And so I'm going, what? So a friend of mine came over, and he said, it took me hours. I got it. Download it. Here's the MP4. Do I load it up? Not. Don't really care. Do I watch it or not? Maybe someday when I got absolutely nothing better to do. But I'm just, the fact that they're trying to hide this kind of stuff, just because of that Streisand effect thing. What's some of the data that you think is the most damaging that they're trying? Is it just freedom in general, permanence? Is it what? What do you think those want to control?
Yeah, I think freedom in general is something they definitely want to control. But I think that they're really... the state is so stone evil. A lot of these controllers are so stone evil that what they really don't want released to the public is information that, you know, shines a light on their activities and what they're doing. We've seen this, right? This is the collateral murder video that in 2010 that Chelsea Manning and Julian Assange WikiLeaks originally put out there really provides an overview of how evil the state apparatus is, the military-industrial complex is. So this is content and information that if it gets out to enough people, that actually helps facilitate the waking up process, allows some people to snap out of it and realize, wow, something is horribly, atrociously wrong with this system that we're living in. So they really want to do everything in their power to maintain secrecy. This idea of state secrecy is a pretty commonly criticized idea that a lot of authors have tried to tackle. I think Russ Baker was one of them who wrote about state secrets from sort of beginning to end. But this is what they want to prevent happening. They don't want information about their everyday activities to be shown to the public. Everything from their taxes to their CIA, NSA.
Yeah, Panama Papers.
Yeah, that's right. Every bit of it. Oh, yeah, and another one is, remember in the 60s, they had the MK Ultra project,
mm-hmm.
where they were basically giving people LSD and MDMA. They were feeding it to each other. And at the time, that was a highly classified, we got to keep this secret. It wasn't until later on that it was unveiled that the government, the CIA specifically, was actually engaged in these projects.
Yeah, but they don't do that anymore because that's wrong. you know, the one thing is, this is what my realization was. I was at an Arcapoco going on that. I go, I get it. Because I got to get it. If I can't get it to a bumper sticker, man, you know, yeah, I'm that libertarian. Yeah, you know, if I can't get it to a bumper sticker, then, you know, it's just too complex. All right, here's the bumper sticker.
Yeah.
The man doesn't want private or public. I mean, however you word that. But the point is they're going, they don't want you to be private. You're not allowed to have hailing frequencies invisible to the crown. You can't have your pirate communication because we're afraid that you might be doing something secret that we don't know about in the secret of not being secret. But really, it's really, you know, planning to be public. Because any secrecy that we would have would be a secret on when we're going to go public with everything. Aha, here we are, and this is what happened. So they definitely don't want you to be public. That's what all this banning stuff is about. That's the deplatforming, the shadow banning, all that, and why we were so adamant about getting, you know, these guys online. When I, Narcozona and Sedona, Berwick and Luke were there, and Larkin and myself and, you know, other guys, and we're doing a presentation up there. It was very successful. And Luke goes, yeah, my backup channel to my main YouTube channel is already 30,000 subscribers. I'm making more money from that. It's building up until it doesn't. I go, yeah, where's that? He goes, on YouTube. I'm like, are you freaking stupid? You know, your backup to YouTube is another YouTube channel? And Max Egan did the same thing. Max Egan comes up. He does a Christchurch. It was a reasonable, just kind of, didn't even see video. He was just talking about it with some background, you know, graphics. And mentioned Christchurch. He's talking about that, what was going on. boom, 3-month suspension on posting anything anymore. So Max Egan is kind of, you know, banned. So I'm just like, and where's his backup channel? Another YouTube channel. I'm going, God, you guys kill me. So this has been, and what do we have over at DLive? Who's coming over? Who's coming over?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I actually
need PewDiePie.
No, seriously, you're absolutely right, Ernie. As a matter of fact, I've been wanting to really start producing more content myself. I've been doing quite a few videos, but I've been uploading them to Facebook, which is a silly move because at any time they can just ban me, and I know that I'm done with. I've really done everything in my power to resist even getting onto YouTube and start really trying to promote a lot of content there, because at any time it can just go away. So I've been uploading most of my content to DTube, and I haven't actually used DLive yet, so I'm really excited to give that a
shot. DLive streaming is doing really well, you know, and of course it hosts it, and kind of our big thing was, all right, this is what happened. 10, 11 or so, you look at my YouTube channel, which they delete. I can't find a bunch of my Ron Paul stuff. I knew they were eventually going to do that. You know, that's why I went dark. I'm like, no. So now they're there. We do streaming on Facebook and YouTube and Twitch and Discord and DLive and. We set that up. We had that ready. That was always the plan. When they did the purging, when they finally went through an 800 Facebook accounts of everybody we know, and they went, I wouldn't be in it. I'm going, whoa, let them go and do that. It'll get a big bunch of backlash, and then I'll come back and I go, hello, I'm here to say we're over there. So when we did that, you know, I'm shocked I've been able to go as long as I have, and I've already started getting, you know, some emails from Facebook going, well, your content, if you hadn't something, I don't care. You know, I'm still there, fine, you know, take me, I don't even know. Don't look, don't care. The thing was, is that we wanted to be able to have these platforms to be able to say, don't be on this platform, but there had to be something else first, IPFS, or something like it. I kept saying not necessarily made safe, but something like it. Well, here we go. So now with Sterling and a lot of the people that you know and developers on Bitcoin Cash, and we have other guys working on this, and we got different companies even going to try and make money on it. Some of them we tried to convince to do it, and they didn't do it, and now they're replaced by other guys that are doing it. And I'm going, yeah, I've been through this feeling before. It was called the mid-90s, and I could feel it coming, but what did they do? Exactly what they did before, they're trying to do again. Here comes the World Wide Web. We're going to make it grandma adjust button easy for you, but it goes through our prism filter bottleneck of we rule you. And now what's happened? Tim Berners-Lee, that invented, that did the World Wide Web, got credit for that, is just at the end of last year, comes out and goes, yeah, it's all jacked up and needs to be more decentralized, and me and my MIT graduate students are going private, and we're going to fix it for you, pinky swear. And I go, yeah, right. But you see, decentralization is the buzz. This is the future. It's whether we can keep it clean or not, or we get from bulletin boards and what IPFS was, you know, coming out of that is individuals having their own files sharing on other computers, which is what this is doing. And this protocol that does that, it's going to be co-opted or tried to. And that's why a lot of it, we talked to yesterday, Lee Neverman, or what his name was. He is like, we got to make sure that we don't get block stream. That we make sure that we have a robust enough development companies and so on that doesn't get to where somebody comes in with a bunch of money and Henry DeCastries of Bilderberg, you know, runs the, we took over IPFS now. Feel me?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to get into a situation where our protocols, our programs, our projects get co-opted and then basically broken down like what clearly looks like happened to Bitcoin Core. Yeah, that's a nasty thing. And that's going
to They want to go to 300K. I mean, I'm like, what? They want, because nobody's using Bitcoin. They're keeping up the volume by just volume, but they're not using it, so it's not going to fill up their, you know, 1 megabyte block to justify having Lightning, so they got to bring it down to 300K so they can fill up blocks to have Lightning. And it's just nobody's using it. Who the hell's behind this?
Yeah, I don't even know. It's a completely crazy thing. I've just basically stopped even paying attention to what's going on in the Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin community, because basically nothing's going on, right? It's a very insular network. They only want a certain group of elite people to even work on it. They're claiming that it's still an open source protocol that anybody can build on, but they didn't enable the opcodes, right? On Bitcoin Cash, the opcodes have been enabled, which allows really easy development on top of that network and to build all kinds of different fun and cool things, whereas they're not really doing anything with it. And when it comes to the value, this is a scary proposition. There's a lot of people have a lot of faith in the value of Bitcoin into the future, but if it doesn't have any other kind of utility, if people can't find other use cases for it, if it's too closely guarded, it's not like gold, right? It's not going to maintain its value because it doesn't have those other utilities, right? Gold, you can do jewelry making, computer components, all kinds of fun stuff. But when it comes to the Bitcoin core network, what can you do? To me, it just looks like a speculative asset. And this is not the direction.
Well, I know exactly what they want. I tell you how it breaks down. They go, we need wide adoption. Well, to me, wide adoption is grandma adjust button. You got wide
That's
adoption.
Right.
To them, it's government sanction. They want GoldmanSucks.gov coin to be Bitcoin. You know, that's what they're doing.
Yep, that's
no,
exactly
that's
right.
It. I mean, how far? No, I mean, that's what I've been calling it. GoldmanSucks.gov coin will be Bitcoin. It will be wide adoption by approval of the central bank of it's here, and it's going to shoot to the moon like it was.
Exactly what they've
been, yeah, like it was Ripple or something. Yeah, it's going to be Ripple.
And that reminds me, a really popular thing right now, Ernie, in the whole crypto space is this idea of a stable coin. But who wants to have a coin that
locked
is
in a dollar,
which is not stable whatsoever, which is just a burning pile of shit that's barely better than the Bolivar in the sense that it's just trash. It's not. It doesn't. The irony of wanting to lock a crypto token up to the fiat dollar just boggles the imagination. Like that's the worst possible thing that you can think of doing
to us. But there are people that's exactly what can you do? Well, then do it. You
know, that's their whole mindset. Yeah, that's their whole...
Yeah, what about... Have you been hearing this? We had at our party this last Saturday, a woman I interviewed, she lives here in the Valley, and she came on. Her name's Debbie Thomas. She was 88 bronze medalist in figure skating. I remember she was world champion back in 85, 86 or something. And I go, I'll give her some due. You know, come on and talk about it. Man, she's pimping these carrot bars, which is like gold at a premium, multi-level kind of whatever the hell it is. But now they're coming out with a crypto that's supposed to be tied to gold. And I'm going, I'm not even sure how you do that, you know, or if it should be done. They got a whole ecosystem about how great and wonderful it is, and it's tied to gold, and you're going to be able to spend in the credit card of it. And I'm going, yeah, that sounds really good. Which is why they're not going to let you do it, you know. So the better idea you have, the more they come after you. So I don't know. What do you think? We're going to tie crypto to something, some way, somehow, and it be in a security vault, pinky swear? How are we going to do that?
Yeah, that reminds me, Ernie. Are you familiar with Anthem? With Anthem Gold and Anthem Blanchard?
No.
Okay, so there's this whole project. A good buddy of mine, his name's Anthem Blanchard. He has a project called Anthem Gold, and he's been in the he owns the website Amaji Metals, which is a very popular place to purchase gold, silver, etc. with crypto.
They were one of the first one. Them and Roberts were the first ones in like the same month or what, I don't remember who was first, that were taking crypto in exchange for precious metals.
Yeah, so Anthem is directly related, and his father was directly related to owning Amaji Metals. Anyway, they're actually working on a stable coin for gold right now, and he's actually got a whole warehouse, and I believe it's in Texas, that's going to store the gold. That's all, like, there's a ton of surveillance cameras constantly streaming on live.
So you can see the agents come take it?
That's right. Oh. So you can see them come take it. True.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
You ought to get Anthem on sometime to get him to see if he'll talk about it. I'll reach out to him for you. But
I went through eGold. I've gone through. We just closed our stuff. Stopped dealing with gold money. Gold money. Yeah. It was kind of we saw Derek Slopey. They go, we saw you paid for some of this in crypto. We need to know where you got that crypto from and how you got that crypto of crypto and KYC of crypto to get your gold. And he goes, what? Where'd you get that dollar to buy that Starbucks? What the hell are you talking about? You know? So he's like, no, hell no. I want all my, and not all of it. So finally he got everything down to like $130-something that he did in crypto. I mean, it wasn't much. It was just out of principle. And I'm going, yep, here we go. Gold money, I lost like $800-$900. It just kind of got lost. Didn't get delivered by UPS. Finally, 13 months later, I got enough from UPS, and they tried to track it down. Damn it, he caught it. So I got that back. So it was a couple hundred dollars a month for years. I took the ads off of Freedom's Phoenix and whatever, and it was to prove a point. If you are not holding it, if you are not in control of it, it's like Tim Pachot from the LibertyAdvisor.com creating all this retirement with your 401k. I go, if you can do crypto and you get to have the private keys, I'm interested. If I'm not, I can't do that, then I'm not interested. Well, he did it. Took him a year, but he did it to where you get to hold the keys. If I'm not holding the money, if I'm not holding the gold, it ain't mine if the man don't want it to be. So yeah. This is what gold money did. It was, you know, and their customer service sucked, and I don't know if they're getting better or not, but it is definitely KYC and anti-money laundering of you're not allowed. It's your money. You just can't have it yet. And that's kind of Bank of America. So we're done. I'm done. If I'm not holding the money, how am I going to get it when I want it the most? And I don't give a crap what crypto, Anthem, D-Gap, whatever. I'm going, yeah? I got 24-7 of watching the FBI jacketed guys walk in and do whatever. Because they always have. Every single time. Okay? In my opinion.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. We don't have complete security over our finances, nor do we have financial responsibility if somebody else has got the keys to the castle and they can absolutely control every aspect of our funds. This is one of the reasons why I'm so happy that, and this is still something that's being worked on, but decentralized exchanges in the cryptocurrency space are just going to be so important for helping to create a situation where people can trade their cryptocurrencies in a true peer-to-peer fashion while holding on to their keys. You know what's happening right now? There's an intermediary step. So you have centralized and decentralized. There's these so-called hybrid exchanges that are combining some aspects of the centralized exchanges with some aspects of the decentralized exchanges. But people are afraid. What? People are afraid to. Yeah. What they're doing is they're wanting to keep the speed and the liquidity of the centralized networks, but also have the privacy and the security of the decentralized networks. But I haven't seen one that is functioning the way it's supposed to be. An example of this is CoinCasso, an Estonian cryptocurrency exchange that supposedly combines the best of both worlds. But I think their initial iteration, they're not allowing people to keep the private keys yet. Everything's on cold storage.
Next.
Their plan is to eventually let people keep their private keys. But I think we just need to keep...
This is one thing that I want, you know, while you're talking about this, Shapeshift and Eric Voorhees. I was shocked that Shapeshift went as long as they did the way they did. Right. And then he goes, yep, this is like the fourth time. First it starts with Satoshi Dice, and he sells out to Calvin Air, by the way. I mean, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, that's a debacle.
Then you got, he goes to BitInstant. I remember we did live purchase first on before Charlie Shrem got arrested. Yeah. We're doing actual live exchanges on the air. We did, you know, Eric was on. We did. I go to Scottsdale, coined. I went to Bank of America, deposited a couple hundred dollars, went and got silver, came back, loop closed, boom, Charlie Shrem's arrested. Hell no. Are you able to use crypto and go and just buy silver at someone we're doing the business of? The hell no. Then BitPay came in. BitPay said, oh, we'll comply. We are compliers. We're all compliant. So I'm like, man, I'm not so interested anymore. Well, then, you know, Eric goes from BitInstant. He goes and does Coinapult out of Panama to help all these, you know, billion flip phones. I mean, literally hundreds of millions of these things or something. And he's going, yeah, we have to have a third party because it's not a smartphone, and we can do, and they're changing, doing Impasa. They're doing cell phone minutes for eggs and so on. And we got an infrastructure. The whole continent of Africa can go crypto. We're going to help them. Yeehaw, and whip out. Nope, not allowed to do that. Fine. Shapeshift. We're going to do it. I can see what needs to be done. It's an exchange without the man, and we can open up a business here in, I don't know, was it Sweden, Switzerland, whatever, and we can go in there and we do it without the man, and that lasted for a while, and then they said, no, you're not allowed KYC. So he does that, and now what do I know? From track record of 4 or 5 efforts of Eric's always going out whipping ass, where the hell is Eric Voorhees now? What's he doing? What's he going to spring on us? And surprise, hello to the man. Do you got any insight on what he's doing?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard much, actually, as to what's going on.
Which means he's doing something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Knowing Eric, that he's probably got some plans that he's going to break out here coming pretty soon. When I heard about the Shapeshift having to KYC AML and go through the whole government process, that was a really upsetting upsetting moment because I had used Shapeshift a whole bunch via the Exodus wallet, and so that was a real big shame that happened. I'm hoping that what comes next is going to be great and grand, though. It very clearly, like we talked about earlier, Ernie, we are moving toward an area where everything by default is going to have more peer-to-peer features and
people. Yeah, it's going to have these features, and they're going to promise, and it's going to kind of have the veneer, and it's going to be, you know, primed and painted with the logo of, but is it really? That's where I count on you guys to keep it honest, because they're always going to say, of course they're going to say decentralized everything. That's the new buzzword. Now it's crypto.
Right.
You know, I remember Drew Phillips from Bitcoin Not Bombs. We'd be talking, you know, I remember the phraseology used to be like, you know, like, you know, hey, that's cool, groovy, word. And then it turned into, oh, that's real crypto. Hey, man, that is so crypto. I'm going, what the hell are you doing? You know, it's cool, man. It's crypto. Well, what's going to be the next one is, that's so decent. You know, decentralization. I just made that up, decent. That's decent. My word, trademark, Ernest Colbert word, whatever the hell. So I'm going, you know, right up there with truthiness. So dissent, that's very dissent of you. You know, you see my point? So everything's going to be decentralized. At least they're going to claim it. But will it really? And who am I going to go to find out?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's also some key ideas that you can keep in mind. One of the things that I do, I'm helping a company right now called Crypto PR Lab. One of the things that we do is analyze white papers before we go to work for these, do work PR work for these crypto companies. And one of the things that I always look for is if their white paper is, you know, 40 plus pages, they're probably trying to cover something up. And if they're using nothing but decentralize this, decentralize that, blockchain this, blockchain that, every other word, they're probably just using the buzzwords in order to get more people to pay attention to their product and probably generate more revenue. But this is a red flag as to whether it's actually a decentralized product and actually has features of a cryptocurrency in the sense that it's a peer-to-peer network. So yeah, you're exactly right. There's a lot of people who are, I want to use this word, fraudulently claiming that they're a decentralized platform and that people involved in it are going to have total access to their private keys, etc. I mean, one of the key principles of decentralization and the fact that you have your private keys is the fact that this company is going to have a lot less power to make decisions for that individual. So it's likely that, and this will keep happening, a lot of these companies will crop up.
It's real simple, and this is the thing with Pachote, the Liberty Advisor thing, is you're doing all this retirement stuff, and I have, you know, a lot of friends and listeners and supporters and so on that are going through the retirement process now, and they're like, yeah, you know, I head down and plowed and worked and put in the 401k of the matching of whatever the hell that they were doing, and now I want to, you know, kind of set it up again, and then I head down and plow in my retirement and go have fun and do whatever the hell I want to do. How do I set up all my stuff to where I'm not worried about a lot of this crap? Well, that's what Tim's been doing. So, Tim, we had Doug Casey on yesterday. He's got a thing he wants us to work with him on, a new newsletter that talks about a lot of this stuff. And I'm having Tim be my liaison to his, you know, my people talk to your people kind of deal. And then next week we'll have one of Doug's guys on. And then after that, we'll do a group Zoom on what we're going to promote to the community. Because I am not going to say, go get into this buzzsaw. You know, this buzzsaw, that buzzsaw, because it's got some descriptive BS of BSGN because it sounded cool. No, hell no. If I'm not controlling it, if it's not mine, if I don't have access and immediately uncensorable, I can do and move it. And then the second thing is, well, didn't they see it? You know, that's the next level. First, I want to be able to do it. And they can see me walk around with my cash. They can see me walk around with my crypto. They can see, but it's freaking mine to walk around with. When they can stop that, well, you don't even get to the other part of whether they can see it or not, because it doesn't matter. They just got it. So I'm going, nope. There are certain traits of importance of this, and the immutability is one of the big things. That's where IPFS comes in. Can they see who has it, where it came from? Yeah, but they can't stop the signal. You know, and that is, you can't stop the signal is the first thing. How pirate communication you get, how much you are obfuscate where and who and what and how, that's a whole nother thing. But you got to, first thing is be willing to take the bullet like Snowden did. Snowden goes, yep, I'm just getting it out. Here, once I do this, boom, I don't want to see it anymore. I erase my thing. You got it. Peace out. Not my problem anymore. I did my thing. Yeah, they knew it was me. I got to come out. Yep, I did it. I could not do it, and screw you. But they couldn't stop it. I want it to where they can't stop it. Then we'll start going into how we can hide it. So this is where I see the future going. And in the space, when we got a lot of the talent, and this is what I get from Tone Vase, man. You just want to
go. Here we go.
He drives me crazy. He's going, they're the smartest people in the room, the smartest people at Blockstream, the smartest Bitcoin Core, smartest. And I go, yeah, the smartest people have screwed me for a long time. I mean, you know, that don't mean anything to me. So now I'm going, are they claiming the smartest people still? Or are they just the most allegiant to the flag or something? I mean, you know, Bitcoin development is being done by whom? Good guys, bad guys, anybody?
Yeah. This is one of the reasons why Bitcoin Cash is so awesome. It's taking that progression that you talked about, right? So first, you know, it's, of course, you know, fully transparent. If somebody wants to look at what you're doing, they probably can. But can they stop that? No, not likely on the Bitcoin Cash network. But the cool thing is now that CoinShuffle has the beta version of that is out now, where on your Electron wallet, it can automatically mix your send address that way that no one can actually view. So there's a privacy feature built into this CoinShuffle wallet, which is absolutely amazing. And once these protocols and these networks open up to this level of work and people who care about privacy and security begin to work on it, these are the types of protocols that naturally crop up. And of course, you don't see this level of innovation on the Bitcoin Core network, of course, because these aren't the kind of people who are interested in
something else.
Yeah, something else.
You know, this is one thing Craig Wright, when he was doing his Satoshi Vision fork and all other alts must die.
Oh, what a cluster.
You know, but I mean, the fact that he would say that the way he was doing it, and oh, you almost die because you're not compliant, we're compliant, yeah. And we'd come there and we're doing, you know, lip lock and, you know, and tonguing with, you know, Uncle Sam, nah, 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 nah. Okay? And I'm going, wow. That is, wow, something to be proud of. You know, so now with this, we just had on the front page, I think it's still there, of John McAfee slapping around with Craig Wright of you're not, him claiming to be Satoshi. Who cares? Are we done giving Craig Wright any ink at all, or is it just fun or what?
100%, Ernie. Yep. Yeah, hopefully that will start to just go away now that the, you know, and you saw recently where and we can talk about this in detail, but I think Eric, for one, is going to. Binance already delisted BSV, already delisted their coin. And
triggered a bunch of others delisting them, too.
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason the split happened, as we talked about before, Ernie, there wasn't technological reasons, you know, major technological reasons. It was a very, very trivial matter, the reasoning why allegedly Craig Wright and BSV split off, or that he wanted to have that chain split off. In my mind, it was only philosophical differences, right? Craig Wright and his crew, they're all wanting to be, like you said, compliant. They're wanting to work with the system. They hate libertarians. They hate anarchists. They want nothing to do with that. So in my mind, this was absolutely a good thing. And this is why having the ability to fork off and work on your own protocol is so absolutely imperative to the future of this technology, because if we get stuck with a group of people that we disagree with on a philosophical level, on a level of values, well, then we're just going to die. You know, we're going to undermine ourselves. We're going to go away. So this is an absolutely amazing thing that we can fork off and go away and split based on philosophical difference, based on differences of value. And that's exactly what happened. Had nothing to do with technology.
You know what I got? I'm looking for the text, and this was from Tempachote. He said this is awesome. It goes something like this. I'm going to use some bad words here, so everybody get over it. What happened, it was a back and forth between Calvin Ayer and John McAfee or something, and finally Calvin Ayer just goes, you know, fuck you. Then he goes, and it was, I wish I could find it, and McAfee, you remember, have you seen this text?
I gotta find it.
All right, first, you know, this, while I'm looking for this, you can entertain the people with, What's going on with McAfee? Why is he even involved in this discussion? And he's on the run from the man because he won't play with the government, and he's going to run for president from the Bahamas or whatever the hell is going on there. You know, why is Aaron and Wright and McAfee, why are we having this Twitter war? Is anybody paying attention? Why is that even going on?
Yeah, I haven't kept up with the Twitter war exactly going on between them two right now, but what's happening probably in my mind is very clear just based on my knowledge of McAfee versus these guys. You know, McAfee is an individual who's completely supported liberty, trying to get away from the state, have nothing to do with the system. So that was his whole modus operandi. So if they're arguing and going back and forth, it likely has to do with the fact that McAfee does not agree with these guys' mentality. They're wanting to capitulate to the state. They're wanting to genuflect before their royal masters and deal with this system. And that's their mindset with cryptocurrency as well. They want crypto to be completely regulatory compliant. They want
because somebody promised them something. Yeah. I tell you, Calvin Iyer, casino, whatever the hell, he gets Satoshi Dice, so he's early on. This is back in, God, what, 10, 11, 12, so, I mean, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
So they're into crypto gambling, which every 10 minutes on average, you have a new block discovered that has numbers on it. So they were using those numbers as kind of a lottery thing. You know, that's awesome. That's a good idea. Yeah. That was a really awesome idea. But, you know, Calvin gets it. He pays gazillions of millions of 20 million, whatever the hell it was. And he gets that. Well, then the FBI wants to come explain it to him. And if you're a casino and certainly in the Caribbean, you want to open up and you must be money laundering. And you probably are, you know. So they're going to explain it to you. Well, having the FBI and you got a little file, if you got your own agent of the card of, you're our bitch and get over it. Well, then, of course, you know, when you got Craig Wright and Calvin Ayres screaming, I'm Satoshi and we're going to centralize and make it part of and GoldmanSucks.gov coin. Well, of course you're in with the man and so on. And I'm going, this is just so obvious to anybody that's, you know, paying attention that their wide adoption is government approval, and that's been brainwashing their head, and they have been committed to, and you do it or we kill you or something. There's some kind of influence going on there. Now, this was, and I'll show the audience here. You know, it was, anyway, you see, this is what it was from. It was Chris Pesea, okay, that sent this out.
Developer. Yeah.
So Chris Pesea, we've had Chris on, you know, before. And so it went back and forth and yada, yada, yada. And Calvin goes, fuck you. Well, John McAfee is like, wow, even I get sucked into issues, but in the long run, do nothing to help free ourselves from the burden of our insane government. I apologize to my followers for my digression. As to Mr. Ayres, we don't live in isolation. Your actions impact everyone. To which he responded, fuck you. Well, then he comes back. This is awesome. And John McAfee's talking to Calvin Iyer, and he goes, I have to admit, Cal, especially when on certain drugs, to being bi-curious in the past. I just never found the right man. Your urgent exclamation, fuck you, thrilled me to the core. I'm not sure about being submissive, however. Could I fuck you first and then see how it goes?
That's a classic McAfee.
So I'm just, I need to get John on just for that. And I was like, holy shit. And I don't know what happened now. Who cares what happened after that? That was just mic drop right there. So this is the ouch quit it level of whatever. And if you're going at it with John McAfee, he's got skills on this front. So you're not going to win a Twitter battle.
Yeah, no, you're going down.
So this has been, we just started doing, like we have Declare Your Independence, Ernest Hancock Telegram, you know, that people have gotten in their live participation. We may make that part of the show a little bit more. We got Fork Fest and Pork Fest, you know, a lot of planning going on. There's different things in the community. And one thing that I'm seeing with Porcupine Freedom Fest, well, you've gone to Pork Fest before, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years now.
You know, the week before, they're doing what they call Fork Fest, which is like where the cool kids go kind of thing. And there'll be Pork Fest. You might stay or not, and not as participatory. And you got the Alt Expo where a bunch of anarchists just doing their own things. And kind of, it's turning in Pork Fest, they're not liking it. They don't see it as an ad or an option or alternative or lead into or build up. They, just like with all these others, it's the same mentality. And a lot of times, the same kind of people, if not the same. same people that want control. That we need it to be this way for that, and kind of what, all right, fine, I don't have a problem with that. You know, there's other alternatives. You know, we got Fork Fest, we got the Jackalope Freedom Festival, we got. And the talk to these guys about it being complimentary or an option, nope. It must die because it's competition. My thing is that I would use, Bittrex. I may get a little bit here because it's more convenient, or I can do and set orders or something like that, and yeah. The man can see it at my $300. I mean, who gives a crap? And then you have, it's kind of a paper wallet of none your damn business. And then there's, you know, more secure wallets. Is there a wallet out there that you're happy with the man's not seeing everything, or those don't exist?
Yeah. It depends on how you use it, but all the hardware wallets are pretty good. If you have cryptocurrency that's coming into it that hasn't been routed through a centralized exchange or someplace where your information, like if you have a hardware wallet and then you have your funds transferred to you from, say, a mining pool, and they've never gone through a centralized exchange before, or they've been shuffled at some point, then you're perfectly fine. I mean, yeah.
Or you just get a paper wallet and you put that address in the payment and they can suck it.
That's right.
I went with my Nano S, man, Sterling. I got a Nano S from, that was at Texas Bitcoin Conference. Yeah, and it went down right during the flipping and crap and everything, and all of a sudden it didn't show a $5,000 transaction. And it was, I'm like, what the hell? You could see it. You can see the transaction did it, just didn't go to the Nano. So I had to go to and get the public, put in my seed for it on the BIP 8039, whatever the hell it was. And then we just found out a few days before that you could even do that as we were going through all this process. And I'm going, if it blinked one, because it has to take a feed from the Block Explorer somehow. And if it doesn't, if there's some little, choke point, and it didn't work. And I go, done. I am not using hardware wallets. If it happened once, it'll happen again. Screw them. So I went back to paper.
This is what we talked about earlier, Ernie. These hardware wallets still suffer some of the same issues from just being an early technology. UI, UX, the grandma just button, as you always say. It's just not simple enough for a lot of people to use. I've never had issues with mine. But hey, get this. Recently, Ledger, they released and this is not a necessarily good thing, but they released a Nano Live, a live application where you can actually view your funds and send and receive funds via the cloud on your desktop. So you can connect to your hardware wallet. But the problem with that is somebody can hack into your computer, government agent, criminal, send your funds out of there, out of your hardware wallet, and be done with it.
I don't give a crap how blah, blah, blah my screen is, and it's all secret and whatever. I go, if I can see it, they can see it, okay? Is there something? Well, they can't see what's on your screen. That'd be wrong. I'm going, God, you're killing me. I'm at your paper. I get handed over paper and scan it in. The guy can cash paper. Paper. The fact that you can be secret is, a big thing to me. Now, whether I got everybody, ooh, Ernie's got a bunch of crypto. Nah, not so much. When it goes up, I use it for stuff. But, this is, I'll probably sit on, some of these that we sit on, and just to make a point to the audience, I'm going, if I take and I spread $1,000, I'll bet you the $1,000 that I did is probably at least 10, 20, something. I mean, I don't know what it would be worth now, but I took $1,000 in Bitcoin. I went on Bittrex, made a big deal about it, and I go, all right, which one do you select? Let's see. I'll get some Nero, because damn. And then, I'll get me a bunch of Bitcoin Cash, cash in all the Bitcoin for that, and Bitcoin Cash. Then I did a little bit of Nexus here, a little bit of Horizon, Zen Cash. They got promise of all kinds of whatever promised me privacy, whatever promised me a future of none of the business, whatever promised me the immutability of and kind of block and kind of stuff. And these are the ones that I selected. Well, those are the ones that survive. Those are the ones that thrive. Those are the ones that always come back. Those are the ones that hit the 300% increase when it starts going again. These are the ones. Why? Because of the promise of crypto. All the others are just bullshit. We got some big buzz of you need to get some Ripple. I mean, why?
Yeah, some kind of bank coin or Fed coin, et cetera. Yep.
Are you in? Well, I mean, obviously, Cash and EOS. I mean, is there some others that got your attention?
Well, I mean, you already know that I'm in Steemit pretty decently. That's a good one. Monero, of course. I have a there's some ICOs that I'm into as well, but not hardcore into because I like the promise of their technology. They're not very private, I would say, but I like. Let me look at my list here. I'll sit because I have a few.
I have a list. You going to share with you?
Let's see. I'll bring it up. Let's see here. One moment.
Take time. We're an after show.
Yeah.
We have to wrap it up here one of these days, but you know, we're just going till you're boring.
Right. Yeah. No worries. So I can share some of the things that I got here. So, like you said, Horizon's good. Oh yeah, Decred is a cryptocurrency. It's a straight up cryptocurrency that I like quite a bit. I have a few of those. Let's see. I like Basic Attention Token, which is based on the Brave browser, which is a browser that I use very often. But the BAT is basically just used to support different kinds of pages. If they're also using Brave browser, you can basically send them this.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
I had Brave browser has been recommended by a bunch of people because it's a browser. It's like Firefox or whatever, but it has some kind of crypto payment add-on or something in it. Am I right?
Yeah, I think they might have just integrated something like that. Usually you just basically use this BAT token to give micro payments to different kinds of, is that what you're referring to?
I don't know. I mean, they were just pepping up. We need to do a show on it. So I sound like I'm smart. You know, the other one is that, on Brave, there was some other decentralizing aspect of it. And what was I going to say? Oh yeah. DAT. You're talking about, there was, who was I talking to? Bill Ottman of Mines.
Yeah.
And I go, look, man, until I can get my Catapult channel on, I'm not interested because, oh, well, our policy is and our policy our policy. And I go, your policy don't mean crap to me. It's your capability. Can you yes or no take it down? Well, yeah, if we got the government man put a gun to our head, we are, you know, like Jeremy goes, well, we are a Delaware corporation operating out of Manchester we got a brick and mortar of the Hellfire missile address. So I'm going, well, then you're screwed. You know, I need to where you can't. Well, Bill Ottman at Mines says, yeah, a lot of his developers, and he's like, yo, keep pushing me everywhere, you know, because $6 million came from Patrick Byrne and T-Zero. They're investing in them for doing different things. And so they see some value in that. Well, Bill is like, man, I'm just being pulled every which way. Of course, everybody wants to do the decentralization thing. And a lot of developers are working on this DAT thing he was talking about, which is kind of another version of IPFS of we get to have something. So he's going, yes, there are these technologies. There are people that are talking about. There are, but any of these technologies in a corporate, you know, corporation granted charter from the state, I guarantee they're not going to be first in line patting you on the back saying, ooh, your customers are private and so on. I give you Lava Bit. So when they go after Snowden, he's communicating on Lava Bit, and they go, we need to have all the people that. He goes, nope, and he just shuts it down. Then they try and get him for contempt for him not complying with spying on everybody. So, I mean, it's just this stuff, if it's not decentralized and private from the beginning, I'm just not really that interested.
Yeah. So, that's a great point, Ernie. I'm right there on board with you because we've already seen that all these major companies and corporations, regardless if they're into blockchain or not, have been compromised in some way. That was all of what Prism was about, right? All these major data providers, AT&T, Verizon, etc., basically created backdoors for the government to siphon information and collect metadata on everyone. So if they can get into these blockchains or cryptocurrencies in the way they did with Blockstream to either create a situation where they rend apart communities or they're able to siphon information, they're going to do whatever they can to do that. They're not going to just be nice to people and allow privacy to naturally crop up. They hate privacy. They want everybody to be completely transparent in all of their, I mean, this is
except government.
That's right, except themselves, which they try to keep everything secret. They don't do a very good job.
Yeah, well, see, even that's the thing. It's privacy and permanence. I'm going, it's privacy and permanent. They don't want you to be private. And then when you go, okay, I'm going to be public with this file right here. Boom, it's there for everybody. No, I can't do that either.
Oh, yeah, the hypocrisy. Yep.
They want state-approved, king-stamped stamp act. They want, you know, propaganda approved. Approved propaganda. That's what they, them, those want. And this very battle right here is what the big battle for the future is do we get to keep all the stuff that we learned over the past decade or more? Do we, you want James Corbett's, God, was that, enslavement, you know, with the Federal Reserve. What was the name of that? You know, Century of Enslavement. Okay, you know, you got that federal. You watch that, boom, I get it. World War One conspiracy, 3-4 part, whatever the heck. I mean, boom, that's the one. There's going to be the second World War is going to come out and be a segue to that. Then you got the 9/11 videos, and you got on and on and on and on. These damn freaking videos, they could probably count on, you know, two hands. Ones that would change the entire planet if a decade or 20 from now it's been gone and it comes back and everybody goes, oh, that's the truth. Hell no, you're so freaking not allowed to do that. And sure as damn Skippy, it can't be available in Turkey or Saudi Arabia or, you know, Iran. Or you see my point?
So yeah,
this,
yeah.
I'm this is the battle. So that's where I've been on this thing and trying to be a leader just as an example that can be done. Once you demonstrate it can be done, and we got Ola Corbett on IPFS and you're done, then Sterling comes out with, and all of Assange WikiLeaks is on there now too. Now what? La 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 la. So I'm where do you think 2020 election cycle all this is going to lead us to?
Oh man, that's
like months away.
That just blows my mind. I can't even like comprehend where we're going to be by the time this all this blows around. I know that there were a lot of things that happened that were not necessarily good whenever the whole Trump election and campaign started to crop up in the first place, right? We had a lot of so-called anarchists who claimed they were anarchists, basically switch over and join on the Trump.
Trust in Trump!
Going full on with the state. So it's going to be very hard to tell the direction this is going to be. But one thing to say for sure that we're going to finish up here with, Ernie, is this is the battle. You're right. The state, it seems like they're really being upset and perturbed to a degree about what we're doing with internet in regards to freedom, privacy, decentralization, and they're going to do everything they can to obfuscate these decentralized platforms, to co-opt them, to control them, and to make sure that we're controlled as individuals. But like you said, the signal can't be stopped. We're already blasting this signal across cyberspace, and more people are getting involved all the time, and we're doing everything in our power to make sure that what's happening is clear. I mean, this is a whole battle that Roger undertook for himself with all the censorship that was happening around scaling Bitcoin. I mean, there was, from the very early days, people wanting to censor the ways to make this technology available to everyone, to make it private, and to make sure that it seeps into the heart of mainstream society. So this literally is the battle. And you're right, we're currently, and it's been like this, living in a dystopian nightmare, something that, you know, I've heard this phrase before. Someone said that if Orwell was alive to look on our society, he would be a pie-eyed optimist in terms of the way that 1984 has panned out. So my hope is that we continue pushing forward. We continue letting people know about this information. Shows like this are an awesome way to help wake people up, to bring people into the fold of what we're trying to do. And it's going to be an amazing thing. Like you said, we're using the technology right now. It's just a matter of continuing to push it out there and to be thought leaders in terms of how we're developing the tech.
And Grandma Just Buttons. You think I'm kidding, man? That's what did 1984 won't be like 1984. The old Macintosh. God, it was a Super Bowl ad in 84, I think it was, going into the Olympics and all this kind of stuff. And the woman, you know, throwing the hammer, wham, into Big Brother screen and smashes it. And, you know, 1984 won't be like 1984. And what happened? They whole entire generation went all Apple and followed, and Steve Jobs is our hero and the icon of whatever. Well, now we got, you know, this with what? Is it Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk? I mean, you know, and for what reasons? Who's seen what's going on? You know, is Elon Musk a closet anarchist or not? I mean, yeah, but he's taking all those, that free money government keeps giving everybody. So I'm just like, this is, the future is coming, and it's going to be set by the standards that we put, what we think is important. It's just general public opinion of it's pirate communication. That, I mean, it's no more complicated than that. Go to piratewithoutborders.com. It's the second and third letter of Captain Mark. There's a bunch there, but the second is on cryptocurrencies, and the third is on communication. And it's not advocating for any particular technology or anything as much as it's the features, the trait, the principle behind it, what Sterling was just talking about. That's what we're advocating for. That's what I've gravitated towards, people like Sterling, that is, you know, at least if not doing it himself, they certainly know the people that are and why and what we're up against. And it has been an interesting coverage that we've been doing over the decades, 30 years doing this stuff. And where has it always been going? From the printing press to crypto, it's always down to the power of the individual. More and more you get Wayne's, the 80s, it was Wayne's World from the basement broadcasting of, you know, grandma's house. And now I'm going, yep, here we go, because the technology's there. Well, it's happening. So I'm really excited, and I'm glad you're there, Sterling, helping us. Give out the web pages and stuff that you want people to go to and see what you're doing now and everything.
Yeah, so anybody wants to check out my work, come to www.sterlinlujan.com. My Facebook page is where I post a lot of content, too. A lot of people keep up with me. Sterling Lujan. And then my public figure page, Sterling Lujan, I also post a lot of memes there. I'm fully enmeshed in meme warfare. And for anybody who's interested in what I'm up to lately, I'm...
Okay, wait. Where are all these memes?
Sterling Lujan on Facebook. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, you find a bunch of memes. Anybody's curious about what I'm up to lately, I am currently a startup advisor, so I'm really helping a bunch of startups really work on refining their messaging and their communications, also looking at helping them keep the pace of change and focus on true decentralization. That's what I'm really interested in. I'm also helping with a PR company called Crypto PR Labs. You can go check out the website for Crypto PR Labs at cryptoprlab.com, and I'm on there listed as well. So,
all right, cool. You know that. You know, one thing before I let you go, the search for IPFS. Do you got guys interested in that? You know, Derek's right in the middle of it, and it's starting. That's going to be the next wave of somebody's going to get filthy, stinking rich on that one. But I'm just you got some ideas of somebody willing and doing. You know, let's just kick ass.
Yeah. I'll see if I can. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but I know there are people who, like some of the Bitcoin Cash developers, have been working very closely with IPFS technologies that integrated. And even the creator of IPFS mentioned that because of the similarities between blockchain tech and IPFS, they're really built for each other. They can be seamlessly integrated in a lot of different ways. And we've seen this already with Steemit, et cetera, and now on Bitcoin Cash. So
yeah, we'll the future, it's a rocking and rolling whatnot. All right, I'm going to show people here. God dang it, got to go to freaking Facebook. All right, where's your memes, man? Show me memes. I'm all memes.
So, okay, go to...
Photos?
If you can go to Sterling Lujan...
Yeah,
on my public figure page, it's the one where I'm in a white shirt smoking a cigar.
I don't see that one, so let me go. I'm on the other one. You're all legit. So let me see. Lujan Sterling. Sterling. I see. All right.
Yeah, and if you click on that one, you start scrolling down, and you'll see I post memes almost every day. I have about 3,600 followers. A pretty active group too.
Take down this monument to slavery, IRS building. Okay, yeah. I'm a big meme guy, man. That's why they want to stop it. They're just like, hell no, you know. Nope. Can't have a meme. It cuts to the bone too much or something, you know. So all right, Sterling Lujan. It's Lurhan. Lujan, Lujan Sterling, Sterlin, on Facebook. So it's Lujan Sterling. You see all the memes there, and we have some fun. All right.
Yes, sir. Steal all you want, Ernie.
Thank you.
Steal my internet memes.
All right. Peace, guys. Hold on a second, Sterling. This is, thanks for tuning in and listening to us, yak it, because it's these conversations that give you a glimpse on what the future is going to be and what role we play. It's just not that much politics, man. That's just a side effect of what you want. General public opinion, and we're here to help.
That's right.
Mold it just a little bit. All right. Thanks, guys. Peace.